Good morning.
Good morning.
How many of you like to juggle and learn to juggle, like to juggle? Okay, I suspected that probably half of you would. Okay, that's pretty close. Excellent. I'm actually going to teach you how to juggle today. And I see some skepticism, maybe even a tiny bit of, is the door still open? That'll be easy. Juggling is something that I actually learned to do when I was young. I learned it from one of my teachers, probably my favorite teacher. He was an excellent teacher. He stood up in front of us one day and said, "You know, in school you're supposed to learn things that are useful." But it's fun to learn something useless once in a while. And it's one of the stickiest lessons he taught me, is that it's fun to learn something useless. And there is almost nothing that's useless. And juggling is not useless. Okay, here's the thing. The reason, it teaches hand-eye coordination like nothing else. And children can almost all children can learn it. Don't know of anybody that can't. So, how do you learn to juggle? I actually have a handout for you today that you've never gotten before. Okay? I'll just give you one for now. I feel like I'm at Lambert's. You guys know Lambert's? How many of you have been to Lambert's? I went there one time with my good friend Matt Durstein, and he wanted me to invite a girl who was related to me because he wanted to spend time with her, but he didn't want to actually ask her. And he wanted to buy her lunch, but he was so distracted with all the good times we were having there that he forgot to pay for her meal. So a couple months later, he said, "Hey, by the way, I forgot to pay for that thing. Can you go back in?" This is back at, I live in Missouri, so I went back in. Anyway, home of the throw rolls is what it is. They throw rolls at you while you're eating. It's fun. So, if you want to learn to juggle, a couple of really basic things that are helpful. First of all, you just learn to throw one ball. So if you want to stand up, it's easier when you stand up. Keep your feet planted. And you want to think about throwing this ball in a nice, easy arc that's about as high as your head. Okay? So, just like that. And really easy. So, you want to think about just an easy movement. One, one, one. Okay? And you want to throw it from one hand to the other. One, one. And your feet need to stay solidly planted all the time. Okay. Just one. So let's see if we can do one. Just say one.
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 One. One. And we're going from left to right. Left. Right. Left. Right. Okay, good. Excellent. You guys are fast learners here. You know how to juggle one ball with two hands now. Okay, that's excellent. Okay. So let's do it just a little bit more. There was one other thing. What is it? Make sure that it keeps a nice arc. You just want to think real easy. Real easy, right up here. Nice, nice arc. One, one. Anyway. Is there something else to learn? Okay. Let's, I'm forgetting there was something I should have written down. Using one. Oh, I know what. Make sure your hands should be kind of like a cup when you catch it. It's also good if your elbows are kind of close, not real wide. Oh, this is what it is. See if you can do this. If you can get to the place where you can do it without looking at the ball, like not really focusing on it. Whoops, I didn't do it. I don't have to chase it. One of the reasons that I don't love using tennis balls is that you really can spend a lot of time chasing it. Okay, so I can actually do it a little easier if I have more than one ball. So actually. A little bit, I don't know what it is. Okay. Well, that's good. Now let's do two here. I'll just show you real. Well, I guess I have to get in my hand out. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. Oops. Oh, we're getting more people here. That's all right. I'm glad you're willing. So much fun to throw them to people. Okay, everybody have two. Most of you do. You need another one? Okay. And this is in some ways the biggest step right here. Okay? And that is if you can learn to do 1, 2. You can do that. That's really the biggest thing. So what you're gonna do here, I know what you're gonna do. You're gonna go, I can juggle. That actually is a form of it, right? It's a different kind. I think it's called, so the one that I'm used to doing, I think it's called a cascade, and this is a waterfall, or it's the other way around, I forget. But anyway, so you're going to go 1, 2. Throw the ball up. Let me draw it here. So you're going to throw the ball up like that, and then you're going to make the other one cross. Okay? And so you're going to, this one goes, maybe this is your right hand, and it's going to go up and drop. This one's going to go up and drop into your other hand. I told you I'm going to teach you how. I didn't say I that you would be able to. There's a little different. Okay, really, and we're not going to spend much time here, so just 30 seconds, right? So 1, 2 is what we're doing. So 1, 2. Okay, and I am pushing you a little bit here, but I want to proceed through these steps so you can actually do it if you want to. And we'll stop with that right now. We'll come back later. You can just kick those balls. If you want to sit down. And you all are doing excellent here, by the way. So, why am I starting a class on Boredom Busters with instructions on juggling? And we can make lots of applications for our teaching. You know, we learn to juggle all the things that we have to do. But there is another reason. I'm going to talk about it later. Okay? So why do we have boredom in schools? I asked a young man this, and he said, I usually get bored when I don't have anything to do. I thought, wisdom. That is actually probably why we get bored. We don't have anything to do. Why do we have boredom in our schools, though? We have great teachers. You all are just excellent people, brilliant people. And we have better curriculum than ever. And we have better facilities. You should have seen the school I went to school in. I mean, brick walls and, oh, it was just terrible, you know. It was block walls, actually, terribly cool. We have parents who are supportive, mostly. In ideal situations, we have all these things. It's excellent. And when you think of boredom, in my mind, boredom is a completely negative state of being. It's just, ugh, just nothing good about it. There's no redeeming factor. And I've often had little patience with people who are bored, with people or students who are bored. I remember telling my students different times, boring people are easily bored, right? But just not take ownership of it. I would also say I don't usually have trouble with being bored in my own life. There seems to be always something to do, something to study, some place to go, or something like that. But I do get bored sometimes. I've gotten bored at meetings, school board meetings. I've gotten bored at church. I have to confess I've gotten bored at school meetings, at teacher meetings. And the real confession, that I'd like to turn the recorder off for this one, but I've even gotten bored when I was speaking. I just thought about it this morning. I remember like thinking, this is boring. The things that I am saying are boring. So, but I had to keep saying because I didn't have anything else to say. Now, children are most often bored, like I said, when they have nothing to do. The other reason they get bored, and we get bored, is we're not actually interested in what is being said or what we're doing. I think that for me, I combat boredom by doing things and by movement. If you just think of movement, if you're sitting and you're just bored, if you just get up, I mean, so many times I just get up and do something because I'm tired of sitting. What, if you're a student in school, you're not supposed to get up, right? That's why they go get, you know, blow their nose when they don't, it's when it's not running, things like that. Sometimes they just need a little bit of movement. So if you think about that as a teacher, yeah, sometimes they're not being bad. They just need some movement. Think about movement in school. However, just a tiny little bit. I'm not going to go far down this road, but think about boredom. Is it completely negative? Is it completely negative? Have you ever held down a job that had boring aspects to it? Yeah, sure. Pouring concrete was not actually boring in itself, although troweling it was, and just there's all often a lot of stress in pouring concrete and people yelling and leaping around and trucks getting stuck and just all kinds of exciting things can happen that are not actually fun. But there's hours of hauling rebar and grading gravel and just stuff. That's a lot of work. And it can be boring. However, is that wasted time? What about the time when you're sitting in church? This is the place you're supposed to be. You know, as a good Christian person, this is where you should be. You're here at church Sunday morning. And what the preacher is saying, or what the guy having devotions is saying, you've heard before. And it's just hard to listen to. Is that wasted time? Well, you know you're not allowed to say that it is. And I hope you actually understand that it's probably not wasted time. It's those things that just seem to bounce off the hard pan of your bored mind actually can kind of stick there. And you can actually remember it later on. And also, it's just good to be there with fellow Christians sometimes. I think there's an aspect to school that's a little bit like that. If everything is just riveting all the time, if we were just juggling all day long, and then we would go from that to some other activity, and then some other activity, that would actually not be fulfilling in your life. So there, somebody has said, let me see, where am I? I'm in notes here. Somebody said, if you are never bored, then you actually never learn to think deeply. And I remember, I grew up just loving the outdoors and spending time in the outdoors. And hiking and things like that, just wonderful. I spent lots of time doing that. Long hikes and work hard and stuff. And I also love fishing. And I remember the first time I saw a guy listening to earbuds, or he had something in his ear while he was fishing. And I thought, what a terrible human being. Why do you have to do that while you're fishing? Why are you so easily bored? Well, since that time I found that I actually like to listen to things when I'm fishing or hiking or whatever. So I guess, I don't know if I've just apostatized or what. I'm just one of those terrible humans now sometimes. However, I find that I do still enjoy the outdoors and everything best when I'm not listening to something. When I'm actually observing, listening to nature, listening to the cicadas that we just heard back in the Midwest, which are roaring away. It's just amazing. Listening to things. Now, I'm just now reading a book called The Shallows. I heard about it years ago, but I just got it recently, and it speaks about how the media that we use is changing our brains. And it's not talking about the content, how that you can listen to a good book on Audible or a podcast and all that. The content is basically ignored. What it's saying is the medium that we're using is changing our brains. It's the way we think. And I haven't read the whole book, so who knows what the conclusion is. But conclusion from other people sounds scary, so you could read it. Now, I do suspect that we're going to continue to find it harder and harder to concentrate as we progress in this way. We're probably going to have to find a way to cope with that in some ways. It does seem to me, just one more little comment from the grouchy old man here. is it feels a little bit like the earbud generation is maybe not quite as joyful as previous generations. So that kind of bothers me a little bit. I do like earbuds. I use them. But I have really started to think that it's probably a really bad thing for us to use them too much, a lot. Okay, now I'm not in any way advancing the notion that we need to make our classes boring in order to develop our students' minds. That was just a little rabbit trail because of my nice alliterative title, you know, Bursting Boredom's Bubble. We're not going to be able to completely, you're not going to be able to completely do that. But you don't have to worry about giving them something boring. It will happen organically. Don't worry. It just does. But if they're bored once in a while, there are worse things. So first of all, have good routines in your class. Now, I know that you do not expect me to say routine when you're talking about Bursting Boredom's Bubble, but it is the best way that I can think of. Good, solid routines where the students know what's coming, and yet they don't quite know what's coming. One of the things that I started to do is every day I do something all year long. Okay, so it's a routine, and yet they don't know exactly what I'm going to say. So the last year I did again one of my favorite things to do, which is this day in history. So if we were having school today, I would start and say, okay, and on this day in history, in 1926, Gertrude Ederle becomes the first woman to swim the English Channel, which I think is 35 miles. She battled 6-foot-high waves. She slathered herself in grease so she could swim faster, and she made it. She swam that in 14 and a half hours. Fantastic. By the way, she beat the previous record set by a man by 2 hours. She's a good swimmer. Also on this day in history, in 1846, the Donner Party encountered their first delay, which ended up affecting the menu later on. You know, terrible joke, I know. 1996, researchers claimed to have found evidence of Martian life in Antarctica. So, I wonder how that panned out for them. I actually remember that a little bit. Also, in 1890, there was the first execution by electric chair. And I believe that was in the United States, but I'm not positive. We have talked about methods of execution in school a fair amount. It's something that comes up in history. It seems to be kind of a ghoulish pleasure or gruesome thing. I'm not a huge fan of the death penalty. And part of the reason is because of the debacle of trying to kill people publicly. This particular case was a lot better than some, but still, I remember that in this case, they gave him a shot, and for 17 seconds, which is a long time if you're under intense pain, he jumped and hopped around there, and it didn't kill him. And so they had to give him another one, and it basically... grossly disfigured his head. I'll just say that. Okay? Which was still better than public hangings, which often took 30 minutes to kill somebody where they would kick and strangle for that. Okay, is that good to give you those visuals to young students? Maybe not. Probably not, depending how young they are. But if they're high schoolers, make sure that they know these gruesome things that they might be in favor of. It's kind of good if they know what's actually going on sometimes, a little bit. Also, huge event on this day in history, 1945, is the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima. It killed 80,000 people instantly. In 8 days, it also ended the war there. And interesting to debate what, you know, good thing for the president to do. Anyway, so this day in history is a thing that I have done different years, and it's been interesting. Sometimes current events is something similar. You can do something like that. I also love to do math and general knowledge drills. Let's see here. Why don't we... Well, first of all, I'm going to give you a math logic problem. This is one of my favorite logic problems. I'm sure some of you have heard it. I make sure every group of students hears it at least once. And it's a story about three men who go into a hotel, and the man behind the desk says that the room is... a room costs $30. And I believe this particular story problem dates back to the 1940s. All right, so I'm not sure about the numbers here, but this is what we have. Room costs $30, so every man, each of the men pay $10. And they go to the room, and a little while later, the man behind the desk realizes that the room was actually only $25, so he sent the bellboy to the guy's room with $5 refund. Right? So, on the way, the bellboy, he says, huh, you know what? It's hard to split $5 between three guys. I'll just keep $2. So I'll keep $2, give them three. They'll be happy. They won't know.
Nobody will ever know.
Except the whole world found out. And so he gave each man $1. And he kept two for himself. So this meant that the men actually only paid $9 for the room. Right. So they had $10, $1 refund, they paid $9. And so what you have there, you have 9 plus 9 plus 9 is 27. The bellboy has $2. Where's that missing dollar? Just an interesting little puzzle for them to think about and ponder over and think about all the different kinds of truth. So, think about that. I love this puzzle, and it's a logic puzzle more than a math puzzle. Right? There is an answer to it, by the way. Okay, so harking back to our discussion or talk about boredom, what would you expect to be the most boring part of the day for students? Now, I drew this little graph on the board here, and this is an actual study. Oh, I forget. I don't know if it was Harvard, and I think it was middle school students. And this, they hooked them up to electrodes and actually followed that during the day for quite a few students, and they compiled this data. This is obviously an average of the brain activity for certain times of the day. Now, these things, I did scramble them all up. So you can't start at the beginning and say, ah, this is breakfast, and so on. They're completely scrambled up. Okay? This one right here. What do you think that is? Any ideas? Okay, no, of course you have no idea. You don't know what I wrote down. This is lab time at school, where they're working with a lab, working with their hands, maybe doing science, or working with rocks or things like that. They're doing something. This right here is when they are at home doing chores. You can see there's almost no activity, which I kind of suspected from some of the things that I remember and some of the things I've observed too. This one is a study time. And this is, I think, study period at school when they're actually studying themselves. So there's some brain activity going on there. This one right here, obviously increased activity, is when they're eating a snack after school, maybe a soda, sugar, and there's increased brain activity. And this one right here was a complete shocker to me until I stopped to think about it. And this is actually when they're sleeping. Do you ever hear that sleep is very important to the development of the child and the brain? That is when they're sleeping. Wow. I was just fascinated by that. And right next to this is school. and specifically, in a case like this where the teacher is standing up there lecturing, pointing to things on the board, things like that, and just kind of passively taking this in. Now, this, of course, has to vary. I've seen studies, too, where there's a high amount of activity when the teacher is speaking. So Maybe they have a lot of bad teachers, who knows? We will say that, maybe especially in the schools that they study, not anything like ours. But I suspect there may be more relevance there than we want to think as dedicated teachers. This one then, let's see, this was homework when they're at home by themselves studying. And then the very least amount of activity, very reassuring, this is TV time. And I have read this for years, that, and it's different than if they're watching a movie, I guess, which a movie is like a book in form, which I understand reading a book has far more brain activity than watching a movie. But watching TV with its commercials and things, your brain just basically shuts off. So, that was a comment from Rafe Esquith, actually. He says, his students come back to their class and say, if you want to be a good student, if you want to succeed in life, don't watch TV. Interesting to me. Okay. I also like to have... Sometimes I've done like a joke of the day or something, or have a student write a joke on the board. Let's see. I've got a quote on the board there. I can't even read it here. What does it say? Life is never fair, and it's a good thing for us that it's not. I usually do at least one quote for every few days, sometimes one per week. And sometimes this is something that I have the students do because I find that they like quotes. Some of them really like quotes, and some of them don't like quotes. Okay, quickly here. Why don't you grab your tennis ball again, very quickly, if you want to stand up. One of the things that's interesting, too, about muscular activity is that learning to juggle is all, it has nothing to do with your intelligence. You're not smarter if you know. It's all about muscle memory. So if you want to just try to do, if you want to, just do one ball, or if you've juggled before and you want to do two, just do two. But get very comfortable doing one. All right, move on. It's probably not any easier, but if you did this for 5 minutes and then you picked it up tomorrow, it would be significantly easier, I think. Okay? Okay, and then a quick comment here on two balls is that what I tend to see people doing is they throw the second ball too fast. So they go, oh. Right? So you want to think about juggling as it's like music. There's a beat of time. Right? So you go one, two. One, two. Oh, it's almost hypnotic. Two, one, two. And go right to left, left to right. And then once you can do like two throws, go ahead and do three. So how many of you can do two throws? So let's just all do it, right? If you're ready. One, two. One, two. One, two. If you can, it's fine. I'm not interested in it making you feel embarrassed or anything. Okay. I've embarrassed myself so many times in front of so many people that I'm just a wee bit callous to it now, obviously. So one, two. One, two. Right, left. Left, right. Okay, now let's see if you can do one, two, three. So you're gonna go one, two, three. Oops, I'm gonna mess that up. One, two, three. How did I do that? I have no idea what I just did.
You have to do it.
So one, then, two,
because your
three.
Hand is empty.
That's what it is. You're right. You're right. Okay. Okay. So can you do one, two, three? One, two, three. Yeah, that's right. You have to throw it into your... That was a tricky part for me to learn. I spent hours trying to learn five balls at one time. I could kind of almost do a little bit. And catching that one is a terrible part. So, one, two, three. Okay, can you do that? You don't have to. That's fine. But just do the one, two. So, one, two. Everybody do that? One, two. One, two. Okay, if you want to do the cascade, like I see some of you doing, you actually, I can't even do it. There you go. So you just switch, you just pass this ball to the other. I don't know why that's so natural. Like, it just seems like it's just the way you should do it. And you can do that with three, but it's actually a lot harder to juggle that way. Mm-hmm. So it's actually a lot easier if you do the one, two, learn to do that first.
Can we see the five?
What's that?
Can we see the five?
I can't do five anymore. I got to where I could just kind of do it a little bit. Do a little more later. Okay, we've seated. Quickly here. I like to do riddles on the board too. This is something too. It's just helps you to think a little bit. I think I wrote one on there. Oh yes, this one. What question can you never say yes to? I bet somebody knows the answers. Anybody know? What question can you never say yes to? Old riddle.
That question?
No. The answer is, are you asleep? I have had some very intelligent students who would come in first thing in the morning and look at the board and see. And sometimes, it was almost annoying how quick they knew the answer. They're just really good at figuring these things out. I also love to do something here. If we could do it very quickly. I like to do things in teams. And I often just build different teams for my classroom. And we do drills almost every morning of just general knowledge. And usually there's something I'm working on. Yeah, let's see. Somebody found me some states and capitals. So let's just do this one really quickly. If you can, and just spend here 2 minutes doing this, can you just line up here, guys on one side? And I don't nearly always do guys against girls, but just because it's easy here. This is not supposed to be like determining who's dominant or anything like that, but we might have a winner. Okay, so if you could line up with somebody up front here and just a single file line there. Okay? If you need to push the chairs apart a little bit, make more room, that's fine. Now what I like to do is this. It's a team. This is a team sport. So you are allowed to help your team. So the guys behind Brother Landon here can say, hey, they can whisper the answer to him or to Abigail, because she won't need any help. She's not school forever. No, that's undue pressure. Okay. But you ladies can help her, but you have to whisper quietly because they're going to hear too. But the people up front have to say the correct answer. And what I want you to say here is capital and state in that order. Okay, capital and state. Ready, set, go.
Florida.
Tallahassee, Florida.
Tallahassee, Florida. I think you said it first. Now you go back to the back of the line. Okay. And you step forward. Remember, you can help him. He's not going to need any help. Oh, yeah. Make sure I'm on the right one. Yeah.
Civil rights marches. He has to say that.
Montgomery, Alabama.
Montgomery, Alabama. Fantastic. Okay. Sometimes I just tell them a word, like I'll just say makeup. Baton Rouge, Louisiana, excellent. Or peach.
Uh-huh. Georgia.
Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, Georgia.
Thanks for the double.
Juno, Alaska.
Alaska. Excellent. Okay, you better stop. Okay, count your cards. guys have?
Five, I think five.
Five? What do you ladies have?
Two.
Two? Okay.
Bravo.
Good job. I like to do that with all kinds of things. One of my favorite things to do, too, is history questions, and we'll do the same thing where just general knowledge, history, and usually I'll tend to do the same, like I'll use a history quiz or a section of history or something, and I'll do it repeatedly so that it actually sticks. So it's not just random trivia that they'll never remember, or, you know, stuff like that. However, it's not the worst thing in the world if the only purpose is to stimulate their thinking and also help them to work together. I like to do it in groups like this because it tends to be somebody who doesn't think fast on their feet in all your groups, and you can help each other. I think it really does help, okay? It builds a little bit of school spirit that's a little more helpful than one person all by themselves. So I have a wonderful history quiz too. Who was the fourth president of the United States? And you can just say it from either side here. Who's the fourth president of the United States?
John Quincy Adams.
No. Good guess. Close.
George Bush.
He's a little bit later. But you got one of the numbers right. You have one of the numbers right. Very, very smart and also very short. Edison. President, excellent.
James Madison,
yes, excellent. What was the name of the series of programs and projects that FDR enacted during the Great Depression?
Alphabet soup.
No, it wasn't. The interesting way of saying it. So FDR...
The New Deal.
The New Deal, which is connected to Teddy Roosevelt because he gave the American people the square deal. And then Roosevelt came along and had a new deal. Let's see. Okay, anyway, things like that we can do. I was going to say, too, I wanted to open this up for just ideas for y'all. What do you all do to burst boredom's bubble in your schools? Any ideas? Something different?
I have a world map on the front wall, and we make two teams, and then I just say a random country, and then
excellent.
I choose the first one to touch it.
Touch it. Okay. Done that. That's an excellent thing to do. Avoid the pushing and shoving. Sometimes it works better if they use rulers, depending on how tall or short they are, things like that. Good. Sometimes, if you have artistic students and you don't like doing bulletin boards, you can ask them to do your bulletin board for you, right? For some of you, that's saying, oh, boring. But for some, that's something they enjoy. And in all of these things, the more you get to know your students, the more opportunities are open up for you, okay? So you know what they're interested in. You know when they're going to be bored. You know when Anna is just going to go to sleep while you're talking or whatever. And you know what might arouse her interest a little bit too. One of the things that do not neglect as you think about school and bursting boredom's bubble is books. Books are fascinating things. Did you know that teachers often don't get paid very much and they can't travel as much? But you can travel anywhere in the world in a book. And you can even time travel in a book, which I would love to do. I think I was maybe born in the wrong century, honestly. I just feel like 1800s. Yeah, I think that was probably me back there. Got skipped over. One of my goals in school is to have my students leave school enjoying books. I'm going to do a really quick book report in closing here. Unless some of you have something else you'd like to say. Okay, excellent. I love book reports. I just gave this one at back east, so poor Dennis has to listen to it again. But he can pretend to be interested anyway. This is about a book that I found all by myself, and it's about the game of basketball. It's called More Than Rivals, about two boys, Eddie and Bill. They both loved the game of basketball. It's a true story, by the way. They were 11 years old. At the beginning of the story, they live on different sides of the track in a small town called Gallatin, Tennessee. One day, they're not allowed to play together either. One day, Eddie is walking home from the park and he hears the sound of a basketball being dribbled, and he peeks through the hedge and he sees six black boys about his own age playing basketball. He watches them wistfully for a while, knowing that he probably can't play with them, and one of the boys gets called home, and so Eddie pushes his way through the hedge, and they look at him and glare at him, and he says, "Can I play?" And Bill, the leader, says, "Well, can you shoot?" And he says, "Yes, I can shoot." He's actually an excellent shot. And so they allow him to play, and they play hard, and he hits some good shots, and they foul him hard, knock him to the ground, and he gets up and calls him on it, doesn't get mad, and they develop this nice kind of friendship, rivalry friendship. It's a friendship that's born over their love for the game of basketball. Time moves along, and Bill's family then eventually moves to the other side of town, which effectively severs their relationship because it's just too far for them. They both grow up into exceptional athletes. Eddie is at 5'10" or 11", can dunk a basketball in ninth grade. And Bill grows to be 6'4". He's very strong and very quick. And they both enter high school and they join their basketball teams, and they both become the captains of their teams, respective teams, separate schools. Both teams have a very strong squad. And Bill's school team goes undefeated, and Eddie's team is also undefeated. And it begins to dawn on the organizers of this high school basketball tournament, whatever it is, that these two teams might meet in the finals, in the state finals. And to further stir this pot, it's announced that the black high school is going to be closing that year because of Brown versus Board of Education ruling. This will be the only game that these teams ever play against each other. And so there is tremendous pressure on the white team, tremendous pressure on the black team. And tension mounts in town, and Eddie, as he walks around town, has people urging him to play hard. Don't let those guys beat you. Don't let them push you around. The Ku Klux Klan has a presence in town. They said, "We'll be there at the game, and if they start any monkey business, we'll be there. We'll back you up." There's also a group of black Vietnamese or Vietnam vets who have just returned, and they tell Bill, "Don't you let those white boys push you around. Okay, you win that game. Play hard, foul them, you win that game." Well, the game day arrives and people pour into the arena, and the blacks on one side and the whites on the other, and the Klan is in this corner and the old vets are in the other corner, and the ball is tossed for the tap, and it's everything people expected. It is an intense game, fighting for every possession. And you know that with a book report, you are not supposed to tell the whole story or ruin the story for your students. And you don't want me to do that this morning, I'm certain. But I'll tell you, something happens at the end of this game that changes the outcome for that whole town. And the story is not really nearly as much about basketball as it is about friendship and overcoming things when we're willing to lay down our prejudices. So, I didn't even get to talk about art or music or a bunch of other things that we should have in our schools, but thank you for your attention. And don't be afraid of boredom, but do fight it. Okay, you're dismissed.